Chapter 40 Verse 1 Some time later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt gave offense to their lord, the king of Egypt. Verse 2 Pharaoh was angry with his two courtiers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. These were important roles in ancient Egypt. The literal translation of cupbearer is officer in charge of drinks. Ancient Egyptian documents testify to how important that person was in pharaonic Egypt. The king's baker was also very important. Bread was not only an Egyptian staple. Egypt is widely regarded as the birthplace of leavened bread. Verse 3 And put them in custody in the house of the chief steward in the same prison house where Joseph was confined. Verse 4 The chief steward assigned Joseph to them, and he attended them. When they had been in custody for some time, Verse 5, both of them, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt who were confined in the prison, dreamed in the same night, each his own dream, and each dream with its own meaning. For the same reason Jacob took note of Joseph's dreams once he had a pair of them, Genesis chapter 37, verses 5 through 11. The cupbearer and baker became particularly interested in their dreams once they realized the two dreams had taken place on the same night. Two dreams with similarities occurring in the same night was considered doubly significant. Verse 6. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were distraught. Verse 7. He asked Pharaoh's courtiers, who were with him in custody in his master's house, saying, Why do you appear downcast today? Verse 8. And they said to him, We had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. In times past, and particularly in the ancient world, people attached much greater significance to dreams than we do today. Therefore, having no one to interpret them caused Joseph's prison mates to be distraught. A dream without an accompanying interpretation is like a diagnosis without a prognosis. Hamilton. Of course, those with a Freudian outlook still attach significance to dreams, but as explanations of our past or present, not as predictors of our future. Seeing one's talents as gifts from God. Verse 8 continued. So Joseph said to them, Surely God can interpret. Tell me your dreams. Joseph made clear to the king's courtiers that it is only God who can interpret dreams. He did not claim any powers of soothsaying or divination. Life humbles most people, and it is becoming increasingly apparent the formerly arrogant young Joseph is becoming a changed person. That Joseph attributed his ability to interpret dreams to God is another reason he is regarded as a particularly righteous human being. How people who have special talents view their talents defines their character and often their life. Unfortunately, most gifted individuals do not regard their special abilities as gifts from God, or even as a gift from nature for that matter. They simply bask in the glory their gift brings them as if they are the source, not the recipients, of their talents. Regarding one's special talents as gifts from God has two important moral benefits. The first is humility. Seeing one's talents as gifts from God is the antidote to arrogance. If you believe God gave you the talent to become a great singer, a brilliant scientist, a gifted athlete, etc., you regard yourself as very lucky, because you realize that other people might work as hard as you and not achieve anywhere near your level of success. That is humility. Arrogant people are insufferable, and as a result, have no real friends. The very gifted who are arrogant have many sycophants, but no true friends. The second moral benefit of regarding one's special talent a gift from God is that one will use it in the service of God, not just in the service of self. One area in which this makes all the difference in the world is the arts. The greatest composer, Johann Sebastian Bach, wrote all his music for the greater glory of God. And it shows. In modern times, which have become largely godless, composers have written music to glorify their own name, not God's. And it also shows. Verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph. He said to him, "In my dream, there was a vine in front of me." Verse 10. On the vine were three branches. It had barely budded, when out came its blossoms and its clusters ripened into grapes. Verse 11. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Scholars have noted this dream involves units of three. The vine has three branches. Three verbs are used to describe the growth of the vine and the branches: budded, out came, and ripened. Three times in verse 11, the cupbearer mentions Pharaoh, and three times the cup. And in verse 11, the cupbearer cites himself three times: I took, I pressed, I placed. Verse 12. Joseph said to him, "This is its interpretation." Richard Elliot Friedman comments, "The significance of dreams in human experience, and the significance of dream interpretation especially, is reflected by this fact. The first divine power possessed by a human in the Tanakh, Hebrew Bible or Old Testament, is the interpretation of dreams." Verse 12 continued, "The three branches are 3 days." Verse 13, "In 3 days, Pharaoh will pardon you and restore you to your post. You will place Pharaoh's cup in his hand, as was your custom formerly when you were his cupbearer." The Hebrew actually says, "In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift your head." Virtually all translations except this one include these words. We cannot rely on miracles. Verse 14. "But think of me when all is well with you again, and do me the kindness of mentioning me to Pharaoh so as to free me from this place." Joseph did not rely solely on God, and he was theologically right to do so. People should not expect miracles from heaven. They should do everything in their power to improve their situation. As a well-known religious aphorism commonly but uncertainly attributed to the great Catholic theologian Augustine teaches, pray as if everything depends on God, work as if everything depends on you. There's a waggish tale that well illustrates this point. A very religious man was once caught in rising floodwaters. He climbed onto the roof of his house and trusted God to rescue him. A neighbor rode by in a canoe and said, "The waters will soon be above your house. Hop in, and we'll paddle to safety." "Thank you," replied the religious man, "but I've prayed, and I have faith that God will save me." Shaking his head, the neighbor rode away. A short time later, the police came by in a powerboat. "The waters will soon be above your house. Hop in, and we'll take you to safety." "No thanks," replied the religious man. "God will save me." The police went on to look for others who wanted saving. The floodwaters continued to rise, threatening to submerge the house. A rescue helicopter spotted the man sitting on the peak of his rooftop with the water closing in. Hovering overhead, the pilot let down a rope ladder and called out through a bullhorn, "The waters will soon be above your house. Climb the ladder and we'll fly you to safety." "No thanks," shouted the religious man. "I've prayed to God, and I'm sure He will save me." The pilot reluctantly flew away. Finally, the floodwaters swept over the rooftop, carrying the man into the floodwaters where he drowned. When he arrived in heaven, he demanded an audience with God. Ushered before God's throne, he said, "Lord, what happened? I prayed for you to save me. I trusted you to save me, and you let me drown." The Lord replied, "First, I sent you a canoe. Next, I sent you a powerboat, and then I sent you a helicopter. What more did you expect?" there are at least two reasons we cannot rely on miraculous intervention. First, if we could rely on miracles, we would sit back and wait for God to do whatever we needed. Second, if we rely on miracles, we are bound to be disappointed in God, and that will often lead to abandonment of faith in God. Verse 15. For in truth, I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, nor have I done anything here that they should have put me in the dungeon. The Hebrew word translated here as dungeon, bor, is the same word used to describe the hole in the ground into which Joseph's brothers threw him, and is usually translated as pit. Joseph's word choice thus highlights the commonality between those two experiences. Verse 16. When the chief baker saw how favorably he had interpreted, he said to Joseph, "In my dream, similarly, there were three openwork baskets on my head." The poor chief baker. After hearing Joseph's optimistic interpretation of the cupbearer's dream, he was anxious to get Joseph's take on his dream, which similarly had the element of three. Unfortunately for him, the similarities ended there. Verse 17. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of food for Pharaoh that a baker prepares, and the birds were eating it out of the basket above my head. In their respective dreams, the cupbearer served Pharaoh, while the baker served the birds, a distinction calling for markedly different interpretations. Verse 18. Joseph answered, "This is its interpretation." Joseph interpreted the baker's dream without any attempt to break the news gently. Instead, his words came across as if he were in a trance, which was appropriate given that he considered himself merely a conduit for God's message. As his total lack of affect suggested, he was not the one in control of what he was saying. Nevertheless, given that he was predicting a man's impending execution, Joseph comes across as somewhat cold-blooded. Verse 18, continued, "The three baskets are 3 days." Verse 19, "In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and impale you upon a pole." Joseph's ominous interpretation of the baker's dream began with the same words as did his favorable interpretation of the cupbearer's dream. Verse 13, "He told both men, Pharaoh will lift your head." The poor baker undoubtedly got excited. However, whereas Joseph told the cupbearer, "Pharaoh will lift his head and restore you to your post," Joseph told the baker, "Pharaoh will lift his head and impale it on a pole." The Hebrew actually reads, "will hang you on a tree." Verse 19 continued, "And the birds will pick off your flesh." One can only imagine the shock this news must have caused and the depth of the baker's dejection. He must have felt deep regret at having confided his dream to Joseph. Not doing so would not have changed anything for him, but now he had to live the next 3 days in dread of his impending doom. The baker's fate must have seemed doubly horrific in a society that revered the dead body. In addition to being hanged, his body would be mutilated. Verse 20. On the third day, his birthday, Pharaoh made a banquet for all his officials, and he singled out his chief cupbearer and his chief baker from among his officials. This is the only birthday mentioned in the Hebrew Bible. Verse 21. He restored the chief cupbearer to his cupbearing, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Verse 22. But the chief baker he impaled, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Memory must be deliberately kept alive. Verse 23. Yet the chief cupbearer did not think of Joseph. He forgot him. The Hebrew reads, "did not remember," rather than "did not think of." Therefore, the verse sounds redundant. The cupbearer did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. The Torah is deliberately redundant, perhaps to emphasize the egregiousness of the cupbearer's ingratitude. In the ancient world, someone who correctly and positively interpreted a dream was believed to have helped make the positive dream come true. Therefore, the cupbearer had even more reason to be grateful to Joseph. The cupbearer's behavior reflected people's tendency to make generous promises to those who help them when they are in distress, but then quickly forget them when their situation improves. That people have short memories is a cliché for a good reason. American humorist and social commentator Will Rogers once quipped, "The short memories of the American voters is what keeps our politicians in office." People need to keep memory alive by deliberately thinking about people or events, or they will forget everything and anything, good, bad, even evil. That is why holidays commemorating great people and great events are so important, and that is why teaching history is so important. At this time in America, few young people know about the founding of their country, and therefore have little appreciation of how special it is. As a consequence, they have little gratitude for their immense good fortune to live in America. And few young people, almost anywhere in the world, know anything about the greatest evils of the 20th century, Nazism and communism. The Torah repeatedly commands remember, Zachor, both the good, the Exodus, and the evil, what Amalek did to you. Without remembering good, the most important moral trait, gratitude, cannot be sustained. And without remembering evil, people are likely, and in many cases destined, to repeat it.